Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Playoffs? Did somebody say playoffs?
The NBA, MLB, and NHL are in full swing, and our partners at BetOnline have you covered.
Bro, I think I'm putting my money on LeBron James. I hope he wins it. Let's go, Lakers.
Nice. So take full advantage of sports being back and get in on the action with hundreds of odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. And there's always an online casino as well. It never closes, Benny.
Well, so head to betonline.ag today and sign up to receive your welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, that's betonline.ag and sign up today.
BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
You're listening to BSI, the podcast
with Benny Philhauer,
Tao Zizo,
and Arco Para.
Enjoy.
Hey, Eric, so basically what the hell happened in Las Vegas? I want you to talk about...
All right, Disney's not going to make a movie with me in it, all right? Or even about that's not happening. I'm never putting the ears back on.
Welcome to BSI, the podcast, season two, episode last. We're going to take a break after this, as we talk to you guys about. We'll take probably about a month off. There's... As most of you guys know, there's some things going on with myself, getting a new job. So I want to make sure that I'm doing that the proper way. And so these guys are allowing me to take a little bit of a break and we'll get back together in October. Anything else to say before we get our main guest? Yeah. I'm sure he's going to have some things to say. He's known to have some words.
He's known to have an opinion on things, on one or two things. So it'll be exciting to... be able to dig into his mind a little bit and basically just let him talk. I mean, we know he loves to talk, and so we'll give him the floor.
All right. Without further ado, welcome Eric Winalda to the podcast. Thanks for coming on, dude. Welcome the legend, Eric Winalda. What's up, dude? Welcome to the show.
You guys look great. You look great. I'm introducing you to the wall. This is what you get when you've got six kids in quarantine. You turn into... an artist in a hurry. So good to be on the like show. It's great to see you.
Hey, it's better than all of our. You have nothing to show. Ike has some champion thing for SKC 2013.
I got a lot of things up there. Yeah. But they're not as abstract as Eric's wall.
There's some Picassos on there.
Definition of abstract. Yeah, there's some crazy stuff. It gets better too. There's more stuff over there.
Oh, wow.
It's not bad, dude.
If that's what your wall looks like, your fridge must look crazy right now.
Oh, come on.
Fridge living is, good in Vegas, dude.
Yeah, it's the fridge is just a bunch of homework that never got done.
But that's okay.
I hear that.
Well, thanks for coming on, man. All right, dude.
So here, I'll give you the rundown of what the show's like. Okay. It's just easy questions, bro. We just talk about nothing, really. So the first part is quick hitters. I'll give you some quick hitters, get you warmed up, easy questions.
Okay.
Then we'll get into your career, whether it be playing, after playing, coaching, managing, all that kind of stuff. And then, let me not forget Sal in 60 Seconds. He does a bit that we finally found for this guy.
kind of a this or that, quick hitting questions in 60 seconds. Ooh. You just got to answer as quick as
possible. It's a competition though, Eric. Yeah. So who's winning it right now? Somebody had 22 answers in a minute.
Duval. Who was it? Duval, Chris Duval.
Chris Duval. So you'll try and answer them as quick as possible. And then at the end, you get to go into Ike's interrogation room, nice. Which he'll put you on the hot seat. He'll ask you five diff questions where you can plead the fifth to one of them.
Only one?
If you don't plead the fifth to any of them, you can ask any one of us a question of your own that we must answer truthfully.
Yeah. Do you guys realize that I noticed in the picture of you guys at the for the podcast, you all have a beard. Yesterday, I had a full beard.
Yeah.
Honest to God, a 2.5 weeker. I don't know how far you guys have ever gotten into a beard life, but wow.
Did you say 2.5 weeks?
Yeah, it was.
That's brutal. Not too long. That's pretty short.
I thought you were going to say years.
Oh, no, I said 2.5 weeks was a long time, and it started to get itchy. I text messaged Lawless, and I said, dude, how do you do it? And everybody said the same thing. You got to get through the itchy part, and I never did. So
I came really off today
for your show.
Oh, I'm kind of with you. 2 weeks, and then I can't go any further. It gets too itchy.
I start getting acne too, dude. I get like oily, so it's no good.
Especially in that Vegas heat too, though, right? I mean, it gets too hot out there.
You guys don't know. It was 100 and a month ago. It was 115 in the shade.
What do you mean you don't know? Sal was in Vegas.
I was like a year ago
selling houses. Did he not sell you your house?
I remember. No, I think I talked him out of Las Vegas Lights. So I remember.
All right. Are you ready for this shit?
I'm ready. Let's go.
All right. Quick hitters. First question. Real easy. Favorite current national team player?
It's Tyler Adams.
Nice. We had him on the show, actually.
Yeah, the reason why I had to think about it for a bit is because you know how it is. I mean, my favorite player changes every 15 minutes, but I really like what he has been able to do lately, and not just the Champions League goal, but just putting it all together. That's fun to watch. I talk to Jesse about it every once in a while, and it's fun when you see a player really just kind of keep going on the ascendancy that he has. So.
What a mentality.
He's a good mentality. Sal, you played.
His mentality is definitely not the one of a, what is he, 22 now? 23, something like that?
Yeah. He's a smart kid.
And that's a hard question, maybe, by the way. I'm only on one question one, but I mean, look, it's a hard question with who do you like the most right now? We have a good group. We have a good group of young players, so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I've heard you say nice things about McKinney as well, Weston McKinney.
Yeah, that was, how about that, huh? We got an American player playing at Juve. I mean, that's
cool.
For me, one of the top teams in the world. So there you go.
Yeah. All right. Harder question here. Historically most overrated national team player.
Oh, wow. This is going to sting. Casey Kelly.
Ooh. I don't mind that, dude. Yeah, Casey's so full of himself. It's okay if he's, you know, he gets, you know, hit down a couple notches.
He's an egg farmer from Seattle. Okay. I mean, look, he got good at catching eggs at one point, but he just forgot about his feet. And that's why Friedel was better.
Hey, but Casey's a goalie. Ooh. I feel like that's like kind of cheating. That's not even really a soccer player. You know?
Wait. He said Friedel's better than Keller though in goal. Do you agree with that? Yeah.
Friedel had a longer, more 10-year career. You know,
yeah, had longer everything. Friedel had a longer reach.
And Friedel's UCLA, so I'm gonna stick up for the Bruins. You know?
Friedel, you could be sitting at the dinner table at one of those national team dinners and say, "Somebody get the ketchup.
Pass the mashed potatoes.
Ask me the salt."
it was unreal.
All right, here we go. You'll enjoy this one. So, I believe you did. You play for Gansler on the national team?
I did.
For Bohr, obviously, right?
Right.
All right. So that's where you go all the way back to. So from Gansler all the way to present day, Greg Berhalter, every coach in between, U.S. men's national team coach that you'd most like to play for. So I'll give you the guys that you get to choose from: Gansler, Bora, Sampson, Bruce, Bob, Jurgen, Berhalter.
Well, I never got to play for Bob or Jurgen on the national team. Or of course, Greg. Greg was a teammate. It's so hard because all of those guys were so different, and their disciplines were different. Bora was just playing tricks on you, on your mind and all, and I hated that. When you become a manager, you remember all the things you hate about the way you were managed. God, it's really hard because I think we all really enjoyed Steve Sampson until we hated it.
Until the World Cup.
Yeah, it was, and it really was an indication that this was a guy who really just came in and enjoyed the job and really kind of let us have personalities and let us really, you know, grow into a team on the heels of what Bora had already built. And it just, the pressure got to him. And at some point he just couldn't really get his arms around what was initially important and what made us successful in the first place. So it's Steve's probably the one I like to play for the most and the one I hated the most. So that's
well, that was the second question. I was going to give you the one that you wouldn't want to play for the most. So it's Samson's for both.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I know what it means to play for Bob Bradley. I know what that means. There's a lot to that. And I used to, as a friend of Bob's now, I try and encourage him to do something else. Let's find a hobby. Let's like get your mind off of this. Let's go golfing. Let's play Scrabble. Let's do something. But
that's not Bob though.
No, it's not. It's like the definition of the greatest night of all time might be the right game was on at the right New Jersey bar and the pizza was really good. I mean, that might be it. That's the best you're going to get.
Do you see Jesse as that type as well? Like going in that path?
No. Jesse's a little different. It's it's really funny for me. I mean, as a teammate, that he would speak up in the locker room and I'd say, shut up and say, you know. And now it's Jesse Marsh is a genius, but for me, I've really enjoyed watching him have success. I think when you've played for Bob, there are a lot of things that you can take. You extract something from everybody. And I read a quote the other day, Tom Hanks, actually. Tom Hanks, when he was getting a Lifetime Achievement Award, he said, I have worked with some of the greatest people in the world, and I've also worked with some of the most horrible people on the planet. But the only thing I did was I paid attention. And the only advice I can give actors today is to pay attention, because if you're not stealing something good or bad and learning from the people you work with, you're just a dope. And he's right, because there's so many different ways to manage, and there's so many different ways to address the game, to play the game. But Jesse took a lot of Bob and he turns into Bob. I mean, even when I talk about him, I start turning into them, you know?
Right. So I mean, that's true though. Jesse is like that. When you hear him talk, he says some things that you could hear it straight out of Bob's mouth.
Right. Ta, like T-A, ta is a word apparently. It's interesting because, it was really funny. It's like 2 days ago, 3 days ago, one of these guys on Twitter posted on this day kind of thing, you know, Ante Razov and Eric Winalda scored and they beat the Columbus Crew 2-1, blah, 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 whatever. Like 19 years ago.
Yeah.
You look at the score sheet on that deal, right? I got subbed in, guys, in the 46th minute, and I got subbed out in the 72nd.
For what? Why?
Yeah, that's the whole point.
Did you get hurt?
No. I remember this. I'm going, wait, what's going on? And Jimmy Curtin was going in for me, and he's apologizing to me, and I go, what the hell's going on here? And then, you know, Bob actually just kind of forgot, I think. It was just really weird. So I basically walked into the locker room and I was pissed. I was like, I was embarrassed. And it was really, so you know how Bob is. So Bob comes in and goes, we okay? You okay? You okay? Yeah, we're all right. And you got, I think it was Dennis Hamlet putting the guys, the subs, you know, who are going to come to the reserve practice tomorrow. I said, we're okay, but I'm not showing up to that damn thing tomorrow. You know, not for, there's no way I'm showing up tomorrow. So he's like, okay, that was it. You know, that was Bob. I mean, when you play for him, there's a three-step process. There's the interrogation. I don't know what Ike is like, but the interrogation that you go through with Bob is to figure out if you're coachable, if you're a good guy.
Right.
That second part is all about being vulnerable and letting you into his world. Like what's the connection? And then the third part is when he gets into tactics. Because once he's realized he can coach you and you're connected, he's gonna share his ideas. But he doesn't come right out of the gate and share his ideas, because then, you know, guys like Stoichkov would be like, what's he talking about? You know, there has to be a whole process before he gets to that moment. So back to Jesse. I think he took a lot of the good from Bob, a lot of the good. And I talked to him maybe a month ago. And his experience in Europe is just, it's really opened his eyes, you know, to see the passion and how important it is and the pressure that he's under, how he deals with it, how he deals with his players. And
to his credit, he's a very smart man, very intelligent man. He has really grown into the job. So,
yeah, Sal loves that.
Not trying to sound like a, you know.
No, I'm a big Jesse Marsh.
Sal's a big, big Jesse fan. So, preaching to the choir.
No, but it's good. And we all grow as people. We grow in different directions sometimes. Sometimes we get bitter. Sometimes we get through that part. I think I speak for myself when I did go through a bad phase, but you come out of it, and if you come out of it in the right direction and you still stay open and you want to learn and you want to get better, that's what ends up making you better. Jesse's right. A great validation.
And I think it's good to just see American guys doing well, whether it be playing, coaching, you know, in
who's
Europe.
This guy from Stuttgart? I mean, what the hell? Whether the Italian New Jersey guy wins wins promotion with Stuttgart? I mean, how do you let that guy fall under the radar? I don't know, but it's right. American coaching is becoming trendy. I hope it's a trend for me too.
All right, last question for you. You've been general manager and technical director. So, best and worst general managers in MLS, do you think?
Oh, best and worst general managers. God, that's tough. What are you doing? Look, man, I'm trying to
get at least in recent time. In recent times, just who's done a good job, who hasn't done a good job. I know you think like that in terms of soccer.
Alexi's the worst. I mean,
he took a question for me.
he failed in LA. He failed in San Jose, and he failed in New York. Take that one, you big mouth. He had to have had the worst run. That was really bad. And then he had to fire Bob.
Because did he bring Beckham in to the Galaxy? Was he not there?
Did he bring him in? No. Tim Lawicki brought him in. But I remember I was working TV, and they told me that, Eric, we need you to say, this is on ESPN, we need you to say that David Beckham is the best player in the world. That was what came in my ear. And I said, I'm not going to say that. I said, we need you to say that MLS has just signed the best soccer player in the world. I said, I'm not going to say that. and literally that was my job is to you know, and that's
right.
I went to Fox because they let me talk. And ESPN, it was like, you know, they wanted to just pull a string and you said what they wanted. And I ended up settling with the most recognizable player on the planet. And I somehow came out of that unscathed. But
I mean, that's not too far off. In 2007, I'm trying to think who would it have been.
I would say it was. I think that's a fair statement. And
most recognizable.
Yeah, most recognizable.
Sure,
yeah.
At that point, he was not the best soccer.
No, not even close. No.
Yeah. That's the hard
at no point was Beckham the best soccer player on the planet.
Well, and maybe for about 10, 15 seconds in a couple of responses. Because that's my thing. Like, everybody wants to say, oh, the best player is Messi, or it's Neymar, or it's Ronaldo. And, you know, the best player in the world changes every 30 seconds on form. And somebody has, in those little moments, the best 30 seconds of their life. And in that moment, they should get for being, in that second, the best player on the planet.
Besides Messi. Messi's the best all the time, though, Eric.
Sal had a moment in Portland. I remember it was pretty damn good.
Yeah, out of my 15 seconds of fame. until that bubble bursted with Cal FC.
Well, you know, you weren't a part of that. You didn't come out.
I was back from an ACL tear. I didn't play in the game,
that one. Good. Yeah, I remember.
We can get into that. I mean, that was a crazy game. I don't know if you guys know, but Eric, you can talk about that for a little bit.
Cal FC was Spencer was a coach.
Yeah.
And what you guys don't realize is when I built that team, that was on the back end of I was supposed to be hired to be the head coach of Chicago. And they ripped my heart out. Andrew Houtman just pulled me in last second and said, you know, we're going to go with this other guy, De Los Cobos. Now, back then, if you guys remember, this is before, you know, all the homegrown stupid rules. And I had built a satellite, if you will, in Oxnard, California, which we utilized the space. We raised some money. We had great fields at Oxnard College. So I was just drawing from all the talent in the area. So I created a team that was essentially going to be a scouting vehicle for Chicago. And it was called CFC. That was supposed to be called Chicago Fire, not Cal FC. So we had to change the name. We couldn't change the name. So we said, no, that means Cal FC. It doesn't mean Chicago. If you go back and look at our Open Cup run, until we got to Portland, we wore the Chicago Fire backup jerseys because they had just switched over to Quaker. And I called my boy Chaz, and he sent me all of the uniforms that they couldn't use anymore. So that was because we had no budget. But anyway, we went into league play, which was fifth, sixth tier. And on paper, we lost every single game. And the reason, but that's not true. We actually would win 8-9-0 on a regular basis. But the problem was is that the registration of the guys had to be done prior to the game. So what would happen is Jesus would show up with Rodrigo and somebody else, and, you know, Diego. And I'd say, is he any good? And throw some shoes on him. Let's go. And we'd win the game. And I'd go shake hands with the other coach and say, we lose on forfeit because those two guys aren't registered. So when we went into the Open Cup, nobody thought we were anything. And we had to win essentially 9 games in a row. And the last game was against Christian Ramirez's team out of, oh, great, my dog.
Blue Here. Star?
Yeah, I don't know what that was called. No. See, I get all the kids to behave, and then this happens.
Yeah, go. Come here.
What team? Christian Ramirez played for Irvine Strikers. I know that.
No, it was a team. Come here. Sit down.
And then he went to Concordia, I think. College, and did he play for Orange County Blues?
Sponsor, that's all I remember, and we ended up beating him 2-1.
Okay.
I'm about to throw my dog outside.
but Portland game, I remember
we went into that. Yeah. But the backstory on Merritt Paulsen and John Spencer was the story that I really never told. We went into the competition thinking that all we had to do was win one game. Actually, we just got bombarded by my family. So
no problem.
I'm going to have to either move or... You guys are supposed to come home at like 8:30. Sorry, it's okay. Wait, let me introduce you to my son. Come here.
Yeah, go ahead.
First of all, this is my family, guys. Come here. Say hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Are you Ariel?
She's Ariel right now.
Yeah.
There's got to be a reason and a story behind why the family's home, and I apologize, but
no, no worries.
I don't think there's any reasons when there's 6 kids. I mean, like, it just happens, dude.
No, this is all part of it. But what happened with Merritt and John was John and I talked, and I say, look, man, we won a couple games, but the truth is, we're in this to play. You know, play your team. Play your first team. Don't come at me with some B team. And that actually happened. I mean, I know Chara played in that game.
Yeah.
Agby played. Eric
our DP, played. Chris Boyd at the time. They, yeah, they everybody. Played.
And it's because you didn't have a game for 14 days and it was going to be against LA. That was your next. So I looked at your calendar and I was thinking, you know, let's just do this. And I made a deal with Merritt that because we have no money, that we would get a small percentage of any of the gate, which he completely reneged on after it was over, and we never got any money whatsoever.
So what is wrong with this man? No verbal agreement is good enough for him?
No, you'll get nothing and like it is what he said. But they were pissed. They were really mad.
Oh, that was a bad time. I remember going into the locker room after that. Like I said, I was up in the stands for that game, coming back from an ACL, and it was just silence for
that.
Was
that the Jack Jewsbury one?
No, Chris Boyd sailed over a penalty. Yeah, Jack was there.
No, is that not the one that Jack got in a fight with?
Yeah, fan. Yep,
the fans
after the game. Yeah,
that's the one he told us. Yeah,
yeah. It was a crazy.
Jack got 16 stitches above his eye. He was at, you know, and the real story behind that, Jack can really prove to me to be a really good guy in that moment, because he was just having at one of these kids, Pablo Cruz, and he kept kicking him and kicking him and kicking him. What he didn't realize is Jesus Gonzalez was his best friend since they were 8, and that was kind of his protector. So the third time that Jack kicked Pablo Cruz, Jesus Gonzalez just came in and grabbed him by the throat right in front of me. And I'm thinking, oh, great, here we go. This is a red card, right? Jack starts to pretend like he's going to, oh, you know, and I'll never forget this. Jesus goes, don't go down. Don't go down. You're supposed to be a captain. You're supposed to be a man. And you should have seen Jack just like this straighten right back up and say, you want to go, man? I'm going to, you know. And then it got real, right? So at the end of the game, the corner kick. Is happening, and Jesus looks at me as if to say, I'm going to get him. He wants to get Jack. If we're winning the game 1-0, there is literally seconds left.
Right.
And sure enough, I don't know what happened, but they went up for a header, and Jesus just came in, speared him, and just filleted him over the eye.
Oh,
it was bad. It was, ask Jack about it. It was bad. I felt, but at the end of the game, at the, when it was all over and you lost and it was terrible for Portland, I'll never forget Jack walking up to Jesus and saying, I deserve that. You know what? I was a D-bag the whole game and I didn't give you guys any credit. And you guys just won the game. I'm going to give you your moment. And to me, that was a true captain. That was a moment right. I wasn't really a Jack Dewsbury fan up until that happened. And that was something that I just never forgot. But it was, the kid was totally out of line. It was a red card. But it was just, you know, you're dealing with kids off the street. I mean, these guys are used to the Sunday league. You know, nobody's watching. So they had a bad moment there. But all in all, people will still remember that game. I think it was like trending on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it was,
we joked that it was going to be a Disney movie. They were going to make a Disney movie after that.
Are you kidding?
Miracle on Turf.
Yeah, right. Disney's not going to make a movie with me in it. All right. Or even about that's not happening. I'm never putting the ears back on. That's not happening.
You could be Gordon Bombay. Oh, well. Just believe.
Seriously. Triple Deke. So we recently had Matt Beasley on the show, and we talked about he and longtime teammate Cetsinovic's new venture with State Soccer. They have teamed up with a talented group to build a brand that represents soccer in America the way it deserves.
Yeah, and Matt sent us some gear last week, and honestly, we were blown away by the quality. These guys are truly building something special for the sport and its culture. So naturally, since BSI and States align so well, we are excited to announce they are now our official sponsor.
So this episode is brought to you by States, an athletic lifestyle brand building a revolution of American sport. Their goal is to be a leading lifestyle brand for soccer in America. They're building a brand that truly represents the beautiful game.
Yeah, and now they are offering 15% off with the discount code BSI to our listeners as part of the sponsorship.
Go check out their website at states.soccer. There's no .com. It's simply states.soccer. And their Instagram is definitely worth a follow at statesoccer. Go check them out. All right. Well, we're way past the quick hitters and we're into the interview. What do you got for him, Sal? I mean, I gotta think of some things that I got for
you.
Man,
you can kind of get into more his playing career, but you got into broadcasting right after your playing days, correct?
Yeah.
Like shortly after. Do you wish you had got into more of a coaching role, you know, right after playing, or are you happy with kind of the path you took?
I think it's taken me a long time to say this out loud, but I wish I could go back in time and change that. But if you really know the story, and all of the things included, you know, when I came out of the game, I was so angry. And I basically, Bruce was like, look, if you work really hard, maybe you'll be like the 32nd guy. I don't know, you know. And I was like, all right, I got a chance, you know. So I worked too hard. I blew my knee out. So I was perfect for TV. I was 32 years old. I knew the team. I'd been training with them. I was trying to be the first guy ever to play in four consecutive World Cups. And there was a lot of, and I just left the game with a bitter taste. And the TV stuff, because of my personal situation, I was going through a bad divorce. The money was easy and it made sense. And it allowed me to be a pretty good dad, to be around a lot. So I did immediately get all my badges. I got my B, I got my A, and I was ready to go. And that's kind of where that Chicago story comes in, is I really thought that you know, I would go right into coaching. It's always been what I wanted to do. And Benny will remember this. I was a part of the, you know, whether it was Jenkins or it was Thomas Rongen or Bruce would bring me in, Bob would bring me in. I remember a camp, actually, Benny, with you and Sasha Kleschen. And Bob and I got in the biggest fight about the two of you. It was great. And it really was.
Because I can only imagine.
No, because, okay, this is something that would happen with Bob. Bob would always elect after national team practices. You remember, you guys would all circle up.
Yeah.
And then Zach would take somebody over there. And Pierre would take somebody over there. And if it was Peter or Jesse would take somebody, and Michael would take somebody over there. And then leave me in the circle with all of these guys going, looking over there going, what do you think he's talking to him about? Why isn't he talking to me? And so Bob and I had it out a little bit because I said, listen, I don't like the way we're doing this. We got to see their dirty laundry now. we gotta let them feel free. We gotta let them just express themselves, because we gotta start figuring out what they're all about. It's like when you start dating a girl, you're on your best behavior. You're opening the door. You're brushing your teeth twice. I mean, you look great. You look the part. She comes over and your house is immaculate. That's not really you, is it?
Right.
That's you're yeah. being somebody just to prove, you know, whatever. So
make a good first impression.
But it's still not you. And it's still a lot of those guys that came into the national team at that time. It was a January camp. I think Cunningham was a part of that deal. And I remember him having a pretty good, I remember them thinking that Jeff Cameron was terrible. And I didn't have the same opinion, but these were all conversations and, you know, about players and Sasha and yourself. And I remember thinking, you know, who are the national team players? Who are the guys that got balls? Who are the ones that are going to represent this country the right way? They're not trying to like do what we tell them to do. But who's going to step out of line? Who's going to actually show us what something different? And I thought you've kind of fell into that category a few times. Piss Bob off. Why won't he do this? And I said, because he's playing. He's playing. That's, you got to let it go. You got to let him play. And I think when he brought you back to LAFC, it's because there was an appreciation for your game over all that time. Right. That he finally started to look at you in a different light of like, let's figure out, you know, what this guy's all about. And he liked that. He liked you as a person and as a human being, but also as a player. So all that stuff, you know, when you think about it, I think that I really got cheated out of coaching. I so much love, why I get so much joy out of you know, watching somebody get it or making money or whatever the goal is, you know, to help guys get to their destination. But when I left the game, guys, it was an easy fix. You know, I think I made a joke the other day. My broadcasting career was 6 months longer than my actual playing career, which is really embarrassing, but that's just the way it went for me. I mean, I made a lot of money and I got to be a great dad. And to be around my family, but there was always that part of me that, you know, I'm on TV with makeup and a suit telling people how to do something. And not until I went to Atlanta did I really get a chance to say, you know, now it's me. Now it's, you know, my pants are on fire and I got to fix something.
Right.
And I really got to really kind of, you know.
So your last year, like full year was that Chicago year that in 2001?
Yeah. So then
had a good year, right? Didn't you score 10 goals, something like that? And so when you say you weren't kind of getting, you felt like you had more to give to the pressure, like why, I wouldn't understand at that age scoring 10 goals in 24 games or whatever
that was.
That was
the year of contraction, actually. So what ended up happening was with the, you know, Florida went away. So Tampa Bay and Miami were gone. And if you can imagine back then, I remember having a conversation with my agent, Richard Motzkin. He said, well, I don't think there's enough talent in America for 10 teams. But just think about that statement.
Yeah.
And think about where we are now. And that's clearly not the case. We don't have enough talent for 85 teams. But the where we were in that space and the where soccer was, I was just a casualty of contraction. And I still, to this day, would defend Don Garber's decision to do that. It was one of the smartest moves that the league had ever made, to bring it back, to focus in on what was real, and then expand from there. It just was bad timing. So I think about this now because I play Words with Friends with Wanda, and I was thinking about him the other day. I'm like, dude, this is like you're trying to retire and COVID. I mean, it's like, really? We kind of share that feeling, just not going out the way you wanted to. But right. I wish I would have got it. I always felt like I was dabbling in it, but I never really jumped in. And then that gave a lot of people that the ability to say that I couldn't commit to something, which really wasn't what was going on. It was just, you know, you go on TV long enough, you piss off so many people, it's going to be pretty hard to get a job.
I was going to say that. Do you think like your big personality, you know, in the broadcasting booth led to teams maybe shying away from you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think now it's we've grown up so much that we have a thick skin and we can handle it. But I mean, I would say things like, why are we starting in terrible weather and finishing in horrible weather? I don't get it. Why? I would say things like that on the air. And you know, you got every GM, you know, going, right. Shut this guy up, you know? So there was that component of it. But all in all, I think as people have gotten to know me over the years and all my ex-teammates and whatnot, they'll all say the same thing. I never really am saying something just to be negative. I'm just trying to make this better. And I really do believe some of the things that if we were to alter, we would be a better soccer nation, which has always been the goal.
So Eric, I feel like, I mean, we kind of know a lot of the same people. So you mentioned like Bob, I've talked to Bob, but he's even mentioned you in conversations that I've had with him. You know, I did some stuff for Fox and, you know, Rob Stone talked about you. And so I feel like a lot of people say so much positive things about you. And so with you obviously have a passion to, I think, be a coach. I mean, I feel like that's your real passion nowadays. Do you see that, you know, coming to fruition at some point? Do you feel like you're going to get an opportunity in MLS, you know, at the higher levels in Europe, whatever, somewhere where you feel like you're going to be given a chance to do what you think is your best job?
Well, I hope so. And I do think what people will always say is you got to earn it and you have to prove that you are dedicated to the job. That's something that I really wasn't able to do up until 2018. So now I have, not just because of my time in Las Vegas, but I've really been able to lock in, devote all of my time to becoming a better manager. And there's so many pieces to that. If you think that for one second you got it all figured out, you've already blown it. And I think that maybe 2014 or 15 with Atlanta, I mean, I come into, you know, a team that's won 3 games in 2 years and I changed the whole team. I hired the coach. I'm the technical director. I hired Brian Haynes because he was the perfect fit. And we win the NASL. So they go from a team that has won 3 games in 40-something to winning the trophy. And part of it was, if me was like, see that? I told you so. I knew I could do this. And the other part, which was probably more important, was not recognizing how much I had to learn about managing people, understanding staffing, understanding myself. What are my attributes? What are my strengths, weaknesses? Where can I delegate my energies to other people that can make sure that we leave no stone unturned? So trying to do everything is what I did last year. So even 12 months ago, I could say that I've grown immensely towards being a better manager. And that's that. I hope 12 months from now, I can say that I've continued to grow. But it really comes down to understanding the job, wanting to get better at your trade, never getting out of a learning mindset. And, you know, I'm taking the Pro A right now so I'll have my Pro A license at the end of the year, which has been really challenging with all of COVID and the realities of not being able to be on the field and really show what kind of a person you are in a group or whatever. But I think that that's a step that people could understand that I am very serious about this job. I want to get that opportunity. And now, more important, I need to be prepared for when I get it. So maybe about 80% there. Give me like a couple more months. I think I'll be ready for that.
Yeah. I wonder, like, what kind of coach do you see yourself as being? Like, is there someone that you kind of model yourself after? Are you pretty unique? Is there someone that you can, you know, compare yourself to?
It'd be so to say club, but the funny part is I know Jurgen, and being philosophical at times, being, you know, curious and not intrusive is something that you need to be with the modern player. I mean, let's face it, it's just different, guys. It's a different era. There's so many different ways to get in trouble with your phone or with something that you text or tweet or, you know, the social media. It's just a different world. But when you look at all the things that you need to be, I think it's more important to be yourself. And when you really, truly connect with a player and you really understand them and you know what makes them tick, and then you figure out what they're good at and you make them great at it, that's what and then you are able to figure out, whether that be through experience or whatever, to put all the pieces together, to make that team framework, to build a culture that makes sense. All that stuff is got to be unique to that person. And we all know that the team will take on the personality of it, or their manager. And getting joy out of this game is what I hope to bring. You know, I think that's what I remind my guys every day. It's the best job in the world. Don't cheat yourself out of it. just make sure that you apply yourself so you don't let yourself down in the moments that matter. So I don't know if there's anybody out there. I'd rather just stay true to myself.
Yeah.
And I'll turn into Bob or be like, you know, maybe.
I got one more question for coaching, in terms of coaching, and then sure. We can get up to some other more of the fun stuff. Let's say you get a chance to pick any team right now in MLS in terms of the players that they have, in terms of maybe something that you're seeing that you don't think that is going the right way. Where do you think you could go and make a difference today? Where would you like to go in terms of the players that are there? What's already set up? Where you think you could make a big difference?
I'm not to cut you off, but I actually think that St. Louis is the probably the most amazing opportunity with their new hire of their sporting director, with their vision, with the history that St. Louis has. That would be an amazing, and I'm not trying to, you know, politically place myself into that conversation, but I do really believe building the foundation from the start is vital. But I mean, look, it's hard because like when you're not the coach of a team, one of the things you learn, because this job is so hard, is how much you would hate it if somebody talked about replacing you. Right. And it's not that whether I don't like what they're doing or, but I do see teams that I know could be better. And Right. There are teams that, you know, go through these transitions. There's teams that change their philosophies too much. And they really don't stay true to what was working for them. Or they don't stay in pursuance of what would work for them. So, you know, Kansas City is a crazy place. I mean, that to me, I've always been fascinated with Vermes. You know, Pete and I, we teammates forever. The one thing that Pete will always do, and he's been there a long time now, is that's kind of cool when you can stay there a long time and everybody knows exactly what they're going to get. Right. And that's a big part of what Kansas City has become. And then you have, you know, teams like Orlando where, you know, what is going on over here? You know, it was here, it was there. DC has always been a team that I've followed and you know, wondered if they could ever figure out how to go back in time and embrace what they already had, because I thought that was interesting. And Chicago for me is, because it was the last place I played, I just loved it there. I love the city, I love the people. You know, the one answer that everybody expects me to say, and actually I don't have any issues saying this because of the way it is up, you know, up there, but San Jose, I don't think, you know, in this business it's the only place that I would talk about openly, because it's pretty clear that he's not going to be there forever. And when that job opening comes, and it will come soon, I would love to be in that conversation with San Jose.
Yeah. Why, you think Almeida's going to get kicked out soon?
He's not kicked out. I think he's bored and he wants to move on.
He wants something else?
No, I think there's just too much of an allure to go back to Mexico. I think he really enjoys that. And he's going to let the hair grow back a little bit longer and then off he goes.
It's going to take a while to grow it back to where it was.
I couldn't believe he should in the first place, but that was, you know, look.
It's COVID, dude. Everybody going COVID crazy.
Oh, I know. Wow. Look. Yeah. There it is. It's on my wall. But you know, and there's one that I actually did myself. You can tell which one that is, right? It's the one that actually—that's my daughter.
That's pretty good, dude.
It's not bad. I think I did take a class at San Diego State.
Hey, Eric. So basically, what the hell happened in Las Vegas? I want you to talk about anything you're, you know, willing to talk about as to what went down. Kind of that abrupt.
It's actually
from them.
It's threefold, really. when I first got here, and Brett Lashbrook is our owner, he was very clear that they were selling the team. I understood what I was getting into. It was a lot of antics. You saw some of the stuff that he likes to engage in. And some of that stuff I had to protect my team from. And I, if I could go back in time, I probably would have selected different guys that could have handled some of the pressure. But true story. I mean, I took the job and I went to go talk to Raul Mendiola, who was his own guy.
Yeah.
And the first thing he said was, so how much money, blah, 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 do you want to come back? And he said, I don't want to come back. I'm out. I'm gone. And then he chose Reno over Las Vegas. So my second conversation was with Omar Salgado, who said virtually the same thing. And then he chooses El Paso. So then I go talk to Rafa Garcia and I said, any chance of you sticking around? No, I'm going to go to Oklahoma instead of Las Vegas. And right then in that moment, and I've always thought that I was a pretty good recruiter, I couldn't get anybody to stay. So it had a massive effect on which kind of person or player I brought in. And I did. I made some mistakes there. And some of those guys, just some of the guys that couldn't behave and other guys just weren't the level. But what ended up happening was I signed a contract and I made a funny tweet this week or 2 days ago, I think. I'd been fired twice in my 32 years as a professional and they were both by the same guy. Brett Lashberg. And that the reason for that is at the end of the year, I had a clause in my contract that he was able to basically say, look, you didn't make the playoffs and I want to get rid of your overpaid assistant coach. So we thought it was a good idea to protect him in the sense that if I had a contract, he was protected. That didn't help him. So basically he fired us both just to rehire me to have a new staff at a lower number. So it was just a way to save money. And I didn't have a contract past July 1st. So I think they got let go on the 17th or 18th of June. And those set of circumstances, I've already met with the league. I've talked to the league. I didn't break any rules. I didn't put my team in danger. I wasn't reckless in any way, shape, or form. What had happened was that we had a bunch of players who were asked to sign a waiver, and they weren't willing to do that because the waiver actually had an alteration on their payment, which meant basically the piece of paper said, your contract will be over 10 days after the last game. Now let's go back in time.
No one knows when the last game is.
No one knew when the last game. So you had a lot of guys that had contracts well into December. Like, I'm not signing that. So a lot of frustration within the group. They did get organized. They had a practice. As you saw when I popped up on this screen, it said Winalda Football Academy. That is a part of an email that I used to use. And at some point, my assistant coach had sent out an email 10 o'clock at night, telling the guys, hey, if you practice, we know you guys are still on a voluntary basis. If you practice, this is what you should do. That email was attributed to me, and it was an excuse to fire me. So it was a technicality, which really, I wasn't at the practice, and guys, it's 10:30, man. I was asleep. I was gone. I'm old. But that email went out late. The players thought it was me. Some of them were confused. They showed up. They ended up going to the wrong field, which they weren't supposed to be on. And it was a good excuse to not have to pay me for the rest of the year. So it is what it is. I did have, I did agree to extend my contract literally a week before that. But I, understanding the circumstances of COVID, and it wasn't really about the money, had agreed to stick around knowing that I was not going to get paid 10 days after that last game because I really didn't care at that point. And I really didn't think that it would be in my best interest to come back for a third year under the circumstances. If the ownership changes, then I'd be very interested in continuing. But it was at a stage where it was a big ask for you to be a player on the Las Vegas Lights, and it was a big headache for me to try and manage a bunch of guys who were no longer thrilled about being here. So it was a rough spot.
Sal,
yeah,
on 60 to break it up a bit.
Let's do that.
Sal, let him know the rules, dude.
So I'm basically gonna say,
hey, I got a question. I don't care what the Portland locker room was like. What I want to know, what was the San Diego locker room like after the first game?
We were disappointed, obviously.
One shot off, and it's because my guys ran into each other. One shot.
What a goal from Junior Borjas, by the way. What a goal to that.
Just don't remind him.
He'll be talking about that for a while. Yeah. Man.
These guys played for me in Atlanta and here. And in Atlanta, he had 2 years in a row the goal of the year. Wow. And they really were goals of the year. And I, if this doesn't
yeah, that's got to win goal of the year. That's got to win.
Anybody can beat that. So, look, I mean, that's just one of those guys that if you go through his history, hasn't had the best relationships with his coaches, and has a tendency to get a little ahead of himself. And that's where your managerial skills come in, and you're able to help a guy really focus, lock in, and play. And I love watching Burgos play when he's on.
Yeah. Yeah, else. He's been.
But that, so you guys should have been disappointed.
Yeah, no, I mean, a home opener, right? I mean, what was that?
Did you figure out what we did tactically?
I mean, you guys beat us, you know, if who was hungrier in that game. I would say you guys won a lot of the 50-50 battles, and that ultimately was, I think, the you know, difference in that game. You guys won all the 50-50 battles, all the a little 1v1 duels on the field.
We got lucky on a couple of battles. Maybe there was the rule that we employed on that game was
basically, don't let Sal beat you.
Yeah, from left center back.
Okay, left center back. Let's get the guy on the trap. That guy. No, and you were over there with the little guy, right? Elijah. Wait, how do you say his name?
Yeah, Elijah Martin.
Yeah, so he kind of was in that little pocket, and we were able to really not. It was surprise ambush mentality where we were allowing the ball to come into certain pockets. And then getting you guys to cough.
Trapping us. Yeah.
Yeah. And it worked.
You guys disrupted the game. We couldn't get into a flow. I mean, if you've watched any of our games now, we're a team that outpossesses teams. You know, we haven't been able to score lately, but we tend to want to try and control the game, right, in possession. And in that game, we couldn't get into a rhythm. I mean, we connected two or three passes, and then we were getting tackled.
If you guys got to our halfway line or the halfway line.
Yeah.
And you had the ball for more than 3 seconds.
We were getting swarmed. Yeah. We were.
It was foul, kill the play, end it. Yeah. A lot of fouls in that game.
I think a lot of fouls. So many on both teams. Yeah. It was tons of stuff.
It was our mentality. I'm really disappointed in this group because I really felt like when Frank Yallop came in, he made a couple of immediate changes, brought in Mendiola, brought in Seth, and the middle of the park and it took them 3 or 4 games to find a rhythm. And then they had a couple of good results, a bad one yesterday, but clearly there's some good footballers out
there. We're playing them Wednesday night too, so.
And they're tired.
I'll text you for the lineup.
I would never admit this, but I'm about to if I do that. If I go that route, but I did text the lineup when I knew it. I was trying to help San Diego. There's a funny picture. There's an actually very funny picture of me wearing a San Diego Loyal jersey and a Coors Light.
Oh, really?
Watching the game. I wasn't trying to be, you know.
I mean, San Diego is true to you. I mean, you're a fan of San Diego, right? You're in San Diego State. It's big.
I'm an Aztec. Yeah. I love San Diego. So yeah. It's.
That's the end of part one. Check in tomorrow for part two with Eric Winalda.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.